Hey everybody, I'm Paul Yeager. Welcome inside the MTOM podcast room here at Iowa PBS. And like anything in my life, it's a mess when it comes to organization. We're making some changes here in the room, and hopefully soon you'll notice those in the coming weeks. And if you're looking for what we've looked like in the past, go back. We had a great episode discussing oats. We've also gone on a road trip in Iowa and in Nebraska. We found out what it's like to show hogs at 92 years old. All fun topics, but today is an informational one when it comes to transportation. Ruan Trucking, or Ruan Transportation, is based in Iowa, and it is part of a massive fleet of trucks around this country. Today, we're going to talk with Marty Wadley, who is there. Let me get the title right, the Chief Commercial Officer. We're going to start the discussion with exactly what that means. It's not the most simplest of topics, but Marty's going to explain it. He's going to talk about an act in Congress that they're hoping the trucking industry is that could help alleviate some of these transportation issues, these bottlenecks in the supply chain. We'll also discuss a few other topics when it comes to truckers. Very interesting part about an 18, 19, 20-year-old, a law impacting those age of potential workers. If you have any feedback, market2market@iowapbs.org. We'd love for you to rate this podcast. And if you have a comment, leave it. I'd love to hear what you have to say. I finally started looking at those, and we've got some really nice ones. So that's today's installment of the MTOM Show podcast, which, by the way, was helped by our friends at the Iowa Intermediary Network. And that is an education group that we've done some work with in the past and doing some, hopefully, in the future. This interview is tied in with some of the other ones you've seen lately. When we talked with Vermeer, when we talked with Tanner Emke at CoBank. So give it a look. Keep an eye out on this YouTube channel for more information. Now, let's go to Marty Wadley.
First question, Marty, is you got to explain your title to me. I'm not as familiar with the industry. What's Chief Commercial Officer mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the question, Paul. And it's great to be here and chatting with you about this important topic. So our commercial solutions team is all of our marketing, sales, communication, solutions engineering, data strategy. We made the decision about 2 years ago to roll out all up under one leader in the organization. And at the time, I was leading our supply chain solutions division. And I had this opportunity to kind of bring these groups together and lead these groups. So that's the groups I lead. What we do is we try to, you know, connect with and you know, partner with external customers. We grow, expand our relationships with our existing customers. And, you know, our teams just do a lot of fantastic work from a network optimization standpoint to really, you know, kind of focus on our customer supply chains and the things that we can bring to bear to improve their supply chain and help them get through some of the bottlenecks that I'm sure we'll talk about here in the next few minutes.
Well, you hit on the word supply chains, and that's been the buzzword. Ruan isn't necessarily a company that is, as we'll just use the term that we like to use, the widgets. You're not making the widgets, but you're making sure they get from one point to another point, and you might touch it again. What's been the biggest challenge from where you sit and your company on the supply side issues over the last year and a half?
Yeah, I'd say there's been a few. The main one for us as an asset-based third-party logistics provider, we're about a $1.5 billion company. We move that much freight. We're a dedicated contract transportation company, so a lot of our freight, a lot of our customers' freight moves on our assets. We have about 4,500 drivers, about 4,000 tractors, 10,000 trailers. But we also manage about another 700 million of freight that moves on carrier partners that we work with, whether that's LTL, less than truckload, intermodal, shipping containers, that sort of thing. The biggest challenge we've seen is really around driver retention and recruiting. Now, if you'd asked our VP of HR, he would say, we don't have a recruiting problem, we have a retention problem. If we just kept every one of our drivers, we'd be okay. Well, that's true to a point, but the average age of our driver is about 49 years old. The average age of the driver in the industry is 57 years of age. The statistics show we're about 60,000 drivers short today, heading to probably 100,000 drivers short. Feeling is we need to hire about 1.1 million drivers into the industry over the next decade. to be able to handle the freight that's moving. Everything in the U.S. moves by truck at one point or another, whether it's a part of a product or the finished goods, it's moving by truck. So really it's around, finding and retaining drivers. And some of the things we're doing really is focused on work schedule. Drivers don't leave because of pay typically. It's a very good profession, a very good paying profession. I think our drivers average around $75,000 a year, upwards of 100 in some instances. So it's a very good job for individuals. But we look at ways to get that driver home as much as possible. So we're looking at relays. We're looking at driver helpers. A lot of our, Ruan is a little different from some of the over-the-road carriers where all of our drivers and assets are dedicated to specific customers. So we go out and we make maybe a 15-stop delivery load for a customer, pick up some raw materials and come back home to that home domicile. So our drivers are home nightly, every other night. But whatever we can do to get that driver home so he or she can spend time with their family, go to the sporting events, go to the choir concert, whatever it is, that's more important than pay. It's really around that driver's schedule. Some of the other things we're looking at is automation. Our tractors are as automated as any in the industry. We have collision mitigation, roll stability, lane departure, video safety program, inward and outward facing video so we can coach our drivers. We think that, there's probably always going to be a driver in that cab. You hear about automation and maybe we'll get to the point where, trucks, 80,000 pound trucks are going up and down the interstate without a driver in it. I think that's a ways out, but there could be some things around platooning where this is a process by where the first lead truck and trailer has a driver in the seat. You might have two tractor trailers behind that lead tractor, and this would only be on the interstate. These trucks would never be able to leave the right lane. But the two drivers behind could be in the sleeper berth. They could be sleeping. And then you kind of leapfrog then and you rotate as you're, going long haul. So that could solve some long haul driver shortage challenges, but it doesn't solve the kind of local multi-stop delivery issue. The other thing we're looking at, and, we're heavily involved with the American Trucking Association, many other, companies or industries are involved in pushing through the Drive Safe Act. I don't know if you've heard of this act, Paul, but it's got bipartisan support in the House and the Senate. And what it does is it allows 18, 19, and 20-year-old drivers to drive interstate. So right now you can be an 18-year-old and you can get a Class B CDL and drive in the state, right? So you could drive from Houston to El Paso in Texas. You could be gone, it could be a 2-day run, but you can't drive from Maryland to Virginia. It's an 83-year-old law that says that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds cannot cross state lines. Well, the vast majority of our freight and the freight that moves in this country is not staying within a single state. And even if some of that freight does, if we need to use that driver for another load that maybe the next load would leave Iowa but go to Missouri and then come home, we can't do that with an 18, 19, 20-year-old. So this act, which is an acronym for Developing Responsible Individuals for a Vibrant Economy, which we do have a vibrant economy, it's growing, we need to have access to 18, 19, 20-year-olds to get into this industry. If we lose those individuals to a manufacturing role, to warehouse position, to a construction plumbing, it's tough to pull them back in when they hit 21, right? They've been turned out as a plumber, or they have their welding certificate, whatever it is. So being able to get our hands on some of these younger individuals and get them into our industry is just critically important. And we think there's a lot of support to get this Drive Safe Act home in the Senate.
Were you pushing this for a while, or is this a new thing here in the last year and a half?
We've been pushing for... I've been in the industry for 3 decades. We've been pushing ever since I've been in the industry.
Okay.
It's really gained traction here in the last 2 to 3 years. The act was first brought up in 2018, and it's really gaining traction. I think we'll get there. I mean, there's some concern that, hey, having an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old driving an 80,000-pound vehicle on the interstate or around town is a little too risky. Well, they're doing it today, right? But they're just staying within that state. And with our video safety program, where we have inward facing and outward facing, we're coaching all of our drivers. So we feel we're at a right time in the industry where we can bring a 19-year-old in, you know, have them ride with one of our experienced drivers for, you know, a couple of months, get them out there going on the road, maybe some local stuff, and then get into some longer haul freight. And we're coaching them all the while to make sure that they're focused on the roadway, they're not doing things that they shouldn't be in that cab, that they're not following too closely, things like that, that we'll coach. And we think we can really, you know, solve this driver shortage problem if we can get a hold of some younger individuals and bring them into the industry.
Well, I never knew about that law. I also have an under, it's just in the last couple of days and doing some research for this, I didn't understand that. I always think of the trucking industry and transportation as, yes, it's 2 to 5, 7 day hauls. And, you know, there's stops as somebody makes a run from Maryland through Chicago to Boise and back. But you're saying that this whole get home at the same, you know, sleep in the same bed every night. Was that out of trying to work on that retain side of the business? And then logistically, how do you make that happen? Because not every good is only 4 hours or 3 hours away from home. So I would imagine on the logistics sides, that's a whole nother wrinkle that you didn't have to deal with 30 years ago.
It is. And I think, you know, drivers have changed over time. I think at one time, drivers, it was, you know, kind of the wild, wild west, and you wanted to be gone for 3 weeks. There are a few drivers, Paul, that want to do that, maybe for a few years, but then they, you know, they want to be home. They want to spend time with the family. So it has been a concerted effort by the industry, by our company, by a lot of carriers out there. And our model is a little different because our business is based on kind of that local, you know, out and back within 250 miles. We do have some longer haul freight, but what we focus on that longer haul freight is a way to have relays along that route. So let's say it's a 1,000-mile trip. We might have three relays across that run. So maybe somebody leaves Des Moines, drives to Terre Haute with a outbound finished goods load, swaps out that trailer with a driver that was in, you know, somewhere in maybe Ohio that brought return product back. Those drivers are going to swap trailers and then come back to their home domicile. So it really allows us to, you know, create a job, I think, that is, you know, good paying, but also is not that, hey, I've got to be gone for 2 or 3 weeks at a time to earn that good income.
I have a neighbor who drives to Moline every day. And he, you know, I used to live over there, and he tells me where he goes, and he's home every night. I see him leave in the morning. He drives his 18-wheeler. He comes home. So it's like the distribution centers that these major retailers have gone to, but instead that's where you're doing exchanges with drivers. Oh, that's fascinating. I had not. So somebody has thought of those things. And again, it's back to the labor issue. Where was it that drivers even 10 years ago were recruited from? When you're mentioning that you're trying to get some of those 18 to 20 year olds to still be interested in the industry.
Yeah. You know, a lot of ex-military join the industry. Interestingly enough, they're able to drive across state lines if you're in the military and driving an 18-wheeler.
I thought about that. Yeah.
but not in the private sector. So it's a little strange to me that's the way it is. But, you know, our model is you have to have a year's worth of experience to drive at Ruan, of interstate experience. So typically we're not hiring somebody until they're 22, 23 or older. Our typical market is we're pulling from other over the road carriers, right? Somebody that's maybe been on the road, hasn't had that home time. They're now looking to join a company like ours to, you know, be home every night or, you know, have that consistent work schedule that they can kind of bank on. But as the industry, yeah, we do everything we can to pull team members in. But once you decide you're going to leave another position, whether it's, like I said, manufacturing or plumbing, now you're going to come over and you're going to have to go through a driver training school somewhere. Then you're going to be in a training mode for 6 months. So, you know, it's an expensive, career change mm-hmm. for somebody that probably doesn't have the ability to make a career change like that at the age of 23, 24. So we just kind of, we steal from each other, and it's become this, we have, you know, crazy sign-on bonuses, right? $5, $10, $20,000 sign-on bonuses for drivers. And, you know, they'll work for somebody for a year and then they'll jump for another sign-on bonus. And it becomes this kind of incestuous. We've got so many drivers and they're just moving around between the carriers that are out there. So we have to figure out a way to really inject some new drivers into that industry. And that's what we think the Drive Safe Act will do.
Do you have anecdotal stories of drivers that have made it to these ports? I mean, I'm thinking Los Angeles, Long Beach. I know that the San Francisco, Oakland port hasn't been as backed up, but where they're having to wait, and how does that impact at a port city where you're trying to maybe take a different load? What do you know about that situation?
Yeah, the container challenge is a huge issue, and there's a lot of issues with the containers today. So, you know, you heard about the Suez Canal issue earlier this year. We're still feeling some, you know, challenges from that happened way back in the summer. COVID has, the Delta variant has reared its ugly head, and we're seeing delays at a lot of the Asian ports, China ports, of getting product out because there just aren't enough material handlers to get those containers loaded on the ships. The bigger problem is once those containers get to the U.S., I think we're getting them processed, I think, fairly well here in the U.S., but those containers are so critical to get back to the Asia market that a lot of our exporters aren't able to get their product on those containers, because what the shipping companies want to do is they want to ship them immediately back to China, right? Instead of having it, okay, maybe it ends up in Chicago, it drays to the customer there, they take their product off that came in from China or Vietnam or whatever. Maybe somebody else wants that container in Peoria to load it with outbound product going back. Well, they don't want to dray that trailer on a chassis down to Peoria, load it up, bring it back up to Chicago, put it back on the rail and get it back to Long Beach. They want to stick that empty container immediately back on the rail, get it back to Long Beach and back to China. So that's kind of causing an additional issue from a container shortage and bottleneck standpoint. But the delay you mentioned, it's a huge impact on our drivers. And it's not just at ports. To be that 3PL of choice or a shipper of choice, because a carrier, a driver, you know, they only have 11 drive hours in the day to work and 14 work hours. So if they get to a grocery distribution center or a port or a railhead to get a trailer loaded or to drop and hook a trailer or a container, and it takes them 4 hours, they've just eaten up, you know, a big chunk of their day. And most drivers that are hauling long haul, they get paid by the mile and by the stop. So when they get delayed, it really impacts that driver's ability to earn a living. It impacts that carrier's ability to utilize their equipment and their team members as effectively as possible. So if you can get that driver in and out in 30 minutes, carriers and drivers want to go, you know, deliver or pick up at that customer. If you constantly get delayed for 3 to 4 hours, then there's enough freight out there right now, Paul, that carriers can choose what they haul, and they'll choose not to haul somebody that delays them. So that could be part of the issue at the ports as well.
And that puts different people in power, to use that word. I don't even know if that's the right word, but it's amazing how everything goes back to supply and demand. And then there's the third factor of ease. And because if you can't get that driver back on the road, they're not going to be happy either with you. And that filters up and you hear about that. Okay. We talked about COVID challenges. We've talked about supply. We've talked about labor, the number of drivers. Anything else you thought we were going to talk about that we didn't, or something you want to say again?
Yeah. Just a couple things to wrap up here. You know, we've talked about some of the challenges of the industry, and the driver shortage obviously is a challenge. The container market is a challenge right now for shippers, for manufacturers. One of the things that is impacting the industry is, nuclear verdicts. I don't know if you've heard about some of the nuclear verdicts that have happened in the industry. There was the most recent one in Florida was $1 billion verdict against a small trucking company. It was a $100 million compensatory and $900 million punitive. Now, it was a bad accident. A young individual was killed in a car in that accident. But the cost of insurance is just, it's skyrocketing. And we've got to figure out a way to, you know, get some tort reform in place, or this industry is going to be, you know, devastated. We're seeing it's impacting the ability for new entrants into the industry, because you just can't get the insurance you need. It's causing carriers to leave the industry because they just can't afford the insurance rates. So not only are we having a driver shortage issue, but just the ability to be competitive in this great industry is being impacted by the insurance costs and by these nuclear verdicts that are out there. A couple of the other things I would say is, you know, some of the things we've done through COVID, and, you know, it's been a crazy couple of years for all of us, but we've been able to, I think, get through it very effectively. Our operations leaders have just done an outstanding job. You know, we're a company where we do this dedicated work for, you know, all of these customers. We have 260 operations all over the U.S., and it's typically 10 drivers here and 20 drivers there, and they're going out and making their deliveries and pickups and coming back to that home domicile. When we first started dealing with COVID back in, you know, March, April of 2020, we had some of our customers where their volumes just plummeted. A lot of our manufacturing, some of our metals customers, right? They just didn't have freight to ship because their business was down. But we had other business that just spiked. A lot of our grocery business, a lot of our dairy, a lot of our food and beverage. You know, everybody talked about you couldn't find toilet paper on the shelves, right, at your Target or your Walmart. And so we're delivering a lot of that product. So we took those drivers and those assets that normally would have been delivering, you know, products on the manufacturing side or on the metal side, and we moved them over to move groceries, to move pharma, medical supplies, oxygen to hospitals, other freight that we move. I mean, you name the type of trailing equipment, we have it. We're moving just about every type of product in the U.S. So we were nimble and able to move our assets around. And what we developed from that is our Ruan Freight Exchange. Like I said, we manage about $1.5 billion of freight. But we were a little bit siloed in the way we did it. So we created our IT teams and our operations teams did a great job of allowing all of our freight that we manage to be visible across all of our different service lines, our dedicated contract transportation, our value-added warehousing, brokerage support services, and managed trans. So that now if one of our dedicated assets emptied out in a location and we had freight from one of our managed trans customers that we could now move back and get back to that home domicile, we were able to match that freight up, and it's just been outstanding. A couple of the other things we did, we created an image feature on our handheld device in our tractor so that our driver doesn't have to get out, go to the dock, get a signature on the paper, get within 3 feet of somebody on that dock. So now we can image it, it gets sent, our driver, you know, unloads the product on the dock, gets back in the truck and leaves, and we don't have to have that interaction. I think that's been good for our drivers, and it's been good for our customers as well. And we went to a virtual onboarding process for our drivers. Like I said, we have about 4,500 drivers, and we have low turnover compared to the industry standard. The industry standard, Paul, surprisingly enough, is about 100% turnover. We average about 25%. That still means we have to hire about 1,200 drivers every year, right? So in this era where you're trying to keep your drivers safe, because, you know, in the office here, we're about 20% back in the office. We're 80% working remotely. Well, our drivers and our warehouse team members, our technicians, they can't work remotely, right? They have to go to their office or they have to go to their shop and get the work done. So a way to, you know, make sure that we onboard them as effectively as possible, but do it in a safe way so that we're not bringing 10 people into the same room for that training has been really good for our team members as well. So those are some of the things that I think we improved upon throughout COVID that made us a better organization for our customers and our team members.
I want to follow up on one thing you said about the change. When you're having to shift from one product to another, a type of product to another, who's making that call? Is it who you're doing business for? Or is it you saying, there's nobody over here, but there's a whole lot over there that we need? How does that, I'm always fascinated by that, how that logistic decision gets made.
Yeah, it's typically us in this situation because we're controlling this freight. So you can look at dedicated contract transportation as private fleet under another name. Typically, you don't even notice that it's a Ruan truck going up and down the road because it's branded on the trailer and the cab as if it was our customer's, you know, tractor and trailer. So what we do then is, and sometimes the trailer can't, you know, you can't use a flatbed to haul a load of bulk milk coming in from a producer into a bottling plant. But that tractor and that driver can go over and pull that different trailing equipment. So we make the decision to, you know, it's really a win-win-win situation for our customer, for our driver, and for Ruan. So we're not forcing that dedicated customer to pay for assets that are sitting against the fence because they don't have freight for our drivers to haul. So we take those resources, we go move other freight for another customer that needs additional capacity. So we reduce the cost and the impact on one customer. We bring additional capacity to another customer, and we keep our driver working so that they're not sitting on the sideline.
Oh, that's always fascinating. All right. All right, Marty, is there anything else?
Maybe the last thing I would mention, Paul, is, you know, we have seen a bit of an uptick in applications recently. We think that's due to the fact that the additional unemployment benefits have finally rolled off here in September. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, forced people to the sidelines or kept people on the couch. So I don't know if it's anecdotal or if it's there's a true connection between as those additional funds went away, that, you know, people out there said, well, I better get back to work now. And there are these great driving jobs that I can earn a nice living to support my family. And so we're seeing an uptick in just in the last couple of weeks from a driver application standpoint, which is great for us.
Well, and that's a huge political issue that we could get into if it is a politics side of the unemployment. Because I just the roofer that I was talking to before yesterday when I was trying to get him here, he was saying some of those same things. But I guess is there something with the companies that had paid well or been a good employer that maybe hadn't kept pace and people had gone to other jobs? And now you're having to get back and recalibrate to compete against some of those other things. But also, do you think, I mean, there's a statistic that there's a huge amount of people that have now decided to work for themselves and they've created their own business. And that's sometimes what comes out of a recession. It happened in the 80s. It happened in 08. Is it happening now post-COVID? People are like, I'm going to work for myself. I mean, there's a lot of factors. I mean, do you see any of those as influence?
Oh, absolutely. I think all of those things play into it. I think a lot of people decided over the past couple of years to change, you know, realign their life, right? I didn't like what I was doing. I have the chance now to do something different. So I think you're right. You know, the service industry, we've seen a huge, you know, movement away from, you know, hotel, restaurant, bar. So they're having a difficult time finding those employees. And that's the type of position maybe that the pay was pretty similar between your you know, COVID support payment, your additional unemployment, and some of the other things where you could maybe tread water. But if you're able to make $75,000 to $80,000, you know, driving a tractor and making deliveries and picking a product, yeah, that wasn't a good trade-off. But maybe somebody that decided to leave one industry is maybe looking at the transportation industry now and said, hey, maybe that's not so bad. It's better than it used to be, right? I can be home nightly or every other night. The equipment is safe, right? All of our equipment has automatics now, so you don't have to understand how to go through that manual transmission. So I think you're right. You know, we're seeing an uptick in females applying for our roles, which we'd love to see. We're only about 4% of our driver force is female. We'd love to see many more females. They're great drivers. They're on time. They're just a great addition to the team. So I think you're right. There's a lot of factors that go into it, and we'd love to see some of those individuals in the U.S. that are maybe thinking about a career change, thinking about the transportation industry.
Thanks again to Marty Wadley and our conversation, which is part of the Iowa Intermediary Network discussion. Also, keep an eye on the YouTube channel. If you watch this in video form, there'll be a little more comprehensive look at the supply chain issues related to COVID coming soon. Thank you for watching, and we will see you next time.